From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 270 with guest Steve Murawski, recorded Tuesday, May 22nd, 2012. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and you'll see Run As Radio. Thanks for tuning in to us, such as tuning in a digital world. Today on Run As, our guest is Steven Murawski, and we've had Steven on before. He's a senior Windows system engineer for EdgeNet and Microsoft MVP in PowerShell, although we're not going to talk PowerShell today. In this role, he supports a dynamic infrastructure that pushes the boundaries of the Windows platform. Steven is a founding member of PowerShellMagazine.com, an online publication dedicated to PowerShell content focused for the system administrator, developer, and DBA. Steven also leads two local user groups, the Greater Milwaukee IT Pro User Community and the Greater Milwaukee Script Club. He speaks regularly at local user groups and can be found at various conferences. Welcome back, Steven.
Hey, thanks for having me on again, Richard. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, and you're one of those guys where we end up in conversations offline where I'm like, you know, we should have just recorded that. So, you know, because we're in the same space. We're trying to figure out how these new things are going to be used. And Server 2012 seems to be eating up a big chunk of your life.
Oh, yeah. I've been hip deep in Server 2012 since mid-September last year. So it's been a ride. And it's totally changing the way my data center looks.
Which we're just getting over the virtualization change. Now you're going to do it to us again?
Yeah, and you know, this change, you know, when we're going to talk here about the file servers and storage, it's totally changing the way I'm deploying virtual machines.
Huh. Because, yeah, we saw at the Build conference, they talked about, not that the server got a lot of love at Build, but it got just enough to talk about this idea that you could actually stick your VPC files, those virtual server files, on a file share and access them remotely, which I thought that looked like a cool stunt, but not a good idea.
Well, yeah, it was actually something that's technically possible under Server 2008 and Server 2008 R2, but SMB was just a horrible protocol for being able to do that. It was slow. It wasn't as resilient or as effective as doing something with iSCSI, or, you know, better yet, you know, either sticking some local disk on a server or having a SAN or a fiber channel SAN behind it.
Mm-hmm.
But they've done some cool stuff with SMB in Server 2012, and now the protocol SMB 3. SMB 3, they've done a couple of cool things with it. First off, they improved performance, just on the regular SMB performance, where it's not as laggy as it used to be. And that's good enough in and of itself, but now they've added some stuff like SMB multi-channel. And that allows it actually, even with one network interface, to create multiple TCP connections and leveraging some of the hardware functionality on the NIC, like RSS, receive switches, receive side scaling,
mm-hmm.
where it can scale out the connections across processors on your machine. It can create and spread that load out for multiple connections across multiple processors, and open up these multiple connections to your file share, and now you have resilient connections. So if one connection gets interrupted, you know, you don't have a loss of traffic, but you also increase the amount of data that's getting pulled across from your file server. You have an increase in performance there, and that's just one NIC right out of the box going to one file server.
So this is, I mean, Microsoft has really been driving SMB all along, right? Like, this goes back to NT era.
Oh, yeah. And SMB is a pretty common protocol for a lot of file server workloads, but it wasn't really an application server platform.
Right.
And the way NFS was. And so now SMB is getting there. You know, and the file server modifications that they've got now actually make it possible to have scale out file servers, not just a single file server that's highly available.
And this was a demo I saw at Build, where they would start a file transfer between two machines using this new incarnation of SMB, and then they'd just start adding additional network connections. And you'd see the transfer rate go up and up and up. And then they took network connections away and it went down. And at no point did it fail. It just was sort of transparently modifying its behavior.
Yep. So here's how some of that magic works. So in a normal file server, if you're creating a failover, you create a failover cluster, you'd have a couple of file servers, and you have a virtual network name for your file share.
Right.
And that would get its own IP address. And that IP address would get registered in DNS, and when you go to get a file from that, your client would get the IP address and go make a connection to whatever host was hosting that virtual network name. But with a scale-out file server, you still have a virtual network name for your scale-out file server role, but you also it registers the IP addresses for each node in the cluster that can host that role.
Interesting.
And so it's using a feature in failover clustering called register all providers. And that's a feature that SQL Server leverages in their always-on configuration for multi-subnet failover.
Right.
And it's a feature that you can use for other roles as well in failover clustering. But scale-up file server uses it with SMB3 because your SMB3 client knows to go and ask for all of the IP addresses. It can leverage all of the hosts that can talk to that data source. And that is what allows that dynamic scaling up and scaling down across multiple hosts, multiple network interfaces, allowing the client to, roll over to, one connection fails, roll over to the next, or to request data from multiple sources.
And I always like it when a reliability technique also can be leveraged as a performance technique. So that sort of explains the cadence too, that it is a clustering behavior. So as you add additional NIC connections in, at the sort of heartbeat of the cluster sort of announcing, here's what I've got, here's where I'm at, each time that happens, they could harness those new connections and keep moving files.
Yep. And it's the same concept behind the network load balancing.
Yep.
and failover. So now inbox and server 2012, you have NIC teaming at the OS level.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, again, for sharing the load across your NICs, but also for failover.
Now, we've had NIC teaming in the past, but it took specific NICs with specific drivers.
Correct. And now you can, now since you're NIC teaming at the OS level, where you're looking at the network interface as the OS sees it.
Right.
You can NIC team across vendors. You can, NIC team with the same vendors, of course. But you can also leverage a lot of the platform features that those network interface cards expose, like the receive side scaling.
Right.
Or, receive side coalescing. There's a couple of those features then are leveraged by the NICs. And that benefits felt by the team.
But I could also see where you'd end up with a mixture of NICs. Maybe that NIC has, TCP negotiation or some of those other features, but the other one doesn't. But you don't actually care. That's all under the hood.
All right. And actually, if you have a team that has NICs that support RSS and don't support RSS, team's going to function without RSS.
Oh, okay. So does it go to the lowest common denominator when it teams?
Yes. Yeah. And then there's one feature that SMB can leverage that NIC teaming cannot. And that's RDMA, which is remote direct memory access.
All right. That sounds cool. What does it mean?
So what that means is when I make an SMB connection between two NICs that are RDMA capable,
mm-hmm.
it's going to skip the kernel processing. It's going to go application layer to application layer across the network stack. So you eliminate a whole bunch of overhead in the processing. And so for pretty much all the InfiniBand cards are
right.
RDMA capable.
Yeah.
So you can see huge gains in throughput. They did some testing, and there's a published case study out there that, and you can find this actually out on the TechNet blogs, but they did a demo at Interop, where they showed SMB Direct, that's using RDMA, pushing 5.8 gigabytes a second. Not gigabits a second, gigabytes a second.
Wow.
Over InfiniBand. And that's over one NIC.
Well, and for those who haven't dabbled in InfiniBand, their prices are finally starting to fall. I'm finding NICs now in the $400 or $500 range, but these things are fast. Like, they're no fooling. This is a different way of thinking about network fast. But to me, it still seems like these are very specialized application devices. Like, I purely for machine to machine kind of connections. I don't want to generally switch it, or I'm not going to put InfiniBand in my workstations.
No. And all of these enhancements work over a standard one gig NIC as well.
Right.
And actually most of the testing I'm doing, and I've got production environments running off one gig NICs using a lot of these enhancements in SMB3 to run Hyper-V over SMB. Now you go to 10 gig, you get a ton of extra, bandwidth there, but it's all possible with commodity hardware.
Well, and I think that's really, this is what Microsoft does best, right? Commoditize what is normally an expensive and fancy technology. Because I think off the shelf, I can buy a 4-port 1 gigabit NIC for $200.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and if you drop that in, you can team those NICs or you can use them as separate network interfaces.
Right.
And this is actually one of the cool things that SMB3 will do. Is if you have multiple network interfaces that can see back to your file share, mm-hmm. it will use them all. They don't have to be teamed.
So, yeah, if they're there, it'll just use them.
Where SMB2, the older SMB, it'll create a single TCP connection out of one network interface.
Right.
And SMB3 will scale out across all of them.
Now, normally when I want to address scaling file server problems, I just go to distributed file services, start standing up more servers.
Yep, and you can do that here, and you could also do a scale out file server cluster like we were talking about just a little bit before.
Mm-hmm.
And what you can do there is you have set up a failover cluster, you add a role of a scale out file server, and that role will make every node that can see storage, and they're all using, they can all share storage using the CSV volumes, which is the cluster share volumes. They re-implemented that in Server 2012.
Okay.
Server 2008 R2 and Server, they introduced them for Hyper-V. Now they're available for other workloads as well. So 2008 R2 was kind of a hack on top of the file system.
Right.
And now it's integrated into the file system. Okay. Server 2012. They went through, validated the use case with 2008 R2, and now they're rolling it out to other stuff as well. So they're using these CSV2 volumes, which allow multiple hosts access to the same data storage. So I can make, say 1-1 on my server, or it's attached to a couple of servers in my cluster, make that available across multiple front ends.
Okay. So, I'm just trying to, is that actually going to provide sufficient benefit? I guess, where's the bottleneck here? I mean, we're presuming the bottleneck is NICs. At some point, the storage is the bottleneck too, right?
Yep. Because you can put in, the documentation will say that you can do 2 to 4 nodes in a scale-up file share.
Right.
And really, anything beyond that, if you have anything more than a single gig NIC in there, your storage is going to be your bottleneck.
Yeah, you're going to eventually. It's the storage space that's the problem. Now I'm debating: is the SAN an endangered species? Are we just commoditizing SANs?
You can be. Server 2012 includes a lot of features in their storage spaces to implement a lot of features that normally you'd get from your SAN.
Right.
So if you have a lot of disk attached to an individual server. Now you have a lot of the capabilities that you normally would through storage spaces. And storage spaces can expose disk for CSV2 volumes, so you can do all your scale-up file share on top of it. The nice thing about still having a SAN on the back end is some of the specialties. You need to do replication across site.
Right.
If you need to, if you want to have that fiber channel connection with your 8 gig fiber channel ports, going back to the SAN, and to use your file service to abstract some of that storage and not collapse that layer.
Yeah.
I like using that file shares as an abstraction for my application servers, and then I can manage my SAN separately. I don't see my SANs going away anytime soon. I do see changing their focus a little bit.
Yeah.
Now I'm not wiring up my Hyper-V servers directly to my SAN, but they are not going away, at least in my environment.
In living in high reliability environments, the work I've done, there's still no replacement for a dual data center solution than the 8-gig fiber channel solution. I've got two data centers. They're a couple of miles apart. You know, I got to be able to survive the building burning down. And the only thing that provided me real-time hot failover was fiber channel. I couldn't do it with iSCSI. iSCSI still has intervals.
Yep.
And it sounds like SMB is not going to replace that. If that's actually, and that's a very specific and expensive requirement. But
For sure. But you know, it is a requirement that a number of businesses live with.
Yep.
And you know, so that market and that capability is still, it's still necessary.
Yeah, I don't feel like anybody's replaced that specific demand yet. I wonder if we're going to get there with this technology. I mean, the main reason I see fiber channel persisting is that fiber optic cable has certain specific characteristics that is unique, and nothing seems to have the equivalent.
Right. But, you know, when you're talking about the small to medium business market,
yeah,
the capabilities here to be able to stand up a dynamic infrastructure are, you know, utilizing storage spaces where you can create your own arrays of disks. You know, you even need thumb drives to add to your storage arrays.
Yeah.
and then exposing that via SMB and just using the regular network infrastructure for the small and medium business, this can be a game changer for them. They can now have, you know, accessibility to feature sets that normally would have cost them a lot of money to get implemented in a SAN.
Well, yeah. What I was thinking is what we've done is smoothed out the curve of upgrade. Right, there's this cliff you have to jump over where one day we commit to a SAN and $100,000, $200,000 to sort of jump off that cliff where I could start up with a pretty typical file server with maybe a RAID 5 array in it because I could expose it via SMB that way. I could keep expanding it, keep adding to it, improve its performance with additional NICs. Like, it sounds like I never need to throw anything away.
No, and that's exactly, you can scale up as you need to and, you know, keep adding storage or you can swap it out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, your application servers only need to know your SMB storage path.
Right.
You know, they just need the UNC path back to that storage. And, you know, and that's why I say, you know, it abstracts out some of that storage stuff from your application tier.
So just as this idea that I could drop another server in, join it up to the cluster, get everything synchronized, heck, even use DFS to move the data over to it so I could take the old one out because it is finally getting too old without ever taking anything down.
Yep. Yeah, and if you can add them both to a cluster and they can both see the same storage, you know, or you could end up, you know, taking that old one and making it a nice SCSI target and pushing that traffic over a different network channel to your new server until you can move it over to something else.
Sure.
You know, it gives you a lot of options.
Mm-hmm. Now, on one side, I'm just thinking in terms of a file server starting to groan under the load of everybody's got gigabit Ethernet into their PC now. They're all pulling on this machine. I used to look at, all right, well, I'm going to put 10 gigabit into my file server. But that still means, you know, 10 or a dozen machines pulling hard on it can knock it down. I like the teaming where I can just stay with one and just keep adding NICs as necessary to up the bandwidth.
Right. And you have the teaming that you can do, and you also have, like I mentioned, you know, if your clients are Win8.
Yeah.
This is all Windows 8 and Server 2012 stuff here with SMB3.
Yeah.
You know, in order to gain these benefits, you need that level of OS. But if you have that infrastructure, and you drop additional NICs in, they don't necessarily have to be teamed to gain some of that benefit. Now, you do gain your best benefit, you know, with teaming and leveraging features like RSS in the mix, or having single network interfaces with RDMA.
Yeah.
But there's not a lot of commodity hardware that I've seen that's RDMA enabled. So, you know, teaming with RSS is definitely a great way to expand that infrastructure. You know, moving up to higher performing NICs. But if you're talking regular file server load to workstation, yeah, then yeah, RSS and teaming is your best bet. But RDMA is not necessarily going to be where it pays off. RDMA is going to be your server-to-server workload.
And it's amazing how much, you know, the onboard NICs, even on most file servers, are not that good. As soon as you spend $100 on a NIC, you get a remarkably better NIC.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, it's definitely worth investing that way if you're going to, if you're going to put a significant portion of your infrastructure there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we talked a little bit, you know, about Hyper-V being a good workload for, good workload to push over SMB now. SQL servers as well.
Oh, SQL Server or SMB. That just gives me chills.
Yeah. But have you run into issues where, you know, you're setting up a SQL Server and in a failover scenario and having some difficulty provisioning your storage because you're using a lot of LUNs because you need to spread this loadout across multiple, across multiple different RAID groups. And
oh yeah, but just trying to think through the spindle allocations in a SAN around keeping SQL Server performing well. I mean, I've bumped into systems where a single hard drive would have run faster than this database was running because the spindles were so oversubscribed.
So, what about, you know, what happens then when you need to fail over that server? It takes forever because it's got to go through and mount all of those individual, mount points, all those different LUNs.
Yep.
They all have to fail over to your other server and then be brought up before a SQL Server can come back online.
Right.
What happens when you have, when it's just an SMB path that you're pointing to? You're pointing to a UNC path. Your failover times can be dramatically improved.
Interesting. And what it is we've just added this layer of abstraction so that we don't make SQL Server responsible for standing up all those connections anymore. There's only one, and the file server on the back end is responsible for what it stood up and what it hasn't.
Correct. And if you're looking at a scale-out file server, you have a highly available, highly redundant infrastructure where where you're able to connect via multiple machines. If one of those fails or two of those fail, you can still scale across multiple machines. Multiple connections, allowing, you know, that high bandwidth. And so if you're looking at IOPS, you know, if you're looking for, you know, a lot of performance out of your system, you know, looking at using InfiniBand or something along those lines, you know, you're seeing writes that reads and writes on, you know, say an 8 kilobit file. One of the stats they have here, you know, is the IOPS. You're looking at 330,000 IOPS with local disk, and this is on a Fusion IO card. Local IOPS is around 500,000.
Right.
So you're pretty darn close to having local performance
over InfiniBand. Now, are you going all the way with switches and so forth, or are you just talking about connecting two machines together via InfiniBand?
This will be connecting between the two machines via InfiniBand.
Right. So basically building a file server cluster, but just a pair of machines.
Now, for my production environment, I'm building out one with switching infrastructure and everything. The benchmarking, you know, that stuff, you know, is all run, you know, kind of direct connect. But what I'm looking to do is build out an infrastructure. Right now, I'm running over some regular Ethernet. So I want to build out InfiniBand, take advantage of RDMA and get that kind of performance with my SQL servers over SMB.
Yeah.
Because I feel the pain of failing over a SQL Server instance that has, you know, 40 or 50 LUNs associated to it. It takes a long time.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's a huge deal. But you know, when I'm starting to feel your InfiniBand thinking here now that, you know, I can get an 8-way InfiniBand switch for $2,000. Put 8 servers connected to that, and that's their back-end chatter between each other to maintain synchronization, keep up the file transfer performance, and so forth. They're stinky fast. And then we've got conventional Ethernet NICs to communicate to the world and to team as necessary.
Exactly. You know, so now instead of dropping fiber channel cards, then you're dropping InfiniBand.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of, you know, going back to your storage array, you're going back to a file server array where you can add and remove file servers as needed. You can, add and remove application servers as needed because, you've separated, some of that coupling. Now you're just using TCP/IP to communicate between your application servers and your file servers. So it lowers the barrier to entry to adding servers to your array and to either side, whether it's your SMB array or adding them to your application server side. It just makes your environment that much more scalable.
Yeah. Now, it still feels very roll your own. I'm wondering when we're going to see, a Dell step up and say, here is a InfiniBand Server 2012 dedicated storage solution.
Well, we're not to RTM yet.
Right.
I'm sure these guys are pretty interested in how that's all developing and what they can do with it. Because, there are a lot of inbox features in 2012 that just cry out for those kind of solutions.
Sure. Well, and at the same time, it's, there are already off-the-shelf SAN solutions in iSCSI form and so forth that, if you want to buy something ready to go, it's pretty easy. This feels like a way for us at the SMB level, the small, and it's a shame the two acronyms are the same, but the small business level to be able to say, I have a path forward as I grow. I don't have to rip and replace every time something comes along here. I still feel like I could argue for a long time about, you just held off my SAN acquisition for years with this.
Oh, yeah. And, when I started in IT, I was a single admin at a small police department.
Sure.
80 users, whatever. But we had to have a highly available environment.
Mm-hmm.
And, that was a decent amount of money. Or it was a lot of time trying to make other solutions fit. I wish I had this technology back then.
Yeah, no kidding. It just feels easier and easier. And again, that sense of progression of, I start off with a simple file server with a NIC. Maybe I go to a pair with DFS just for redundancy. I start adding a few extra NICs to keep the performance up. One day I commit to a pair of InfiniBand cards and connect those two machines together. And, then we start talking about more reliability, more performance. So we drop an InfiniBand switch in. We get two more servers, more InfiniBand on the back end. Like, it at no point did you fall off a six-digit acquisition cliff.
Right. Yeah. You can scale out. You can push out your scaling over time,
mm-hmm.
and, build it as you need it. And, it really makes for some really interesting scenarios.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, I still get chills about the idea of pushing something as large as a Hyper-V virtual machine onto a remote environment. But I could see the advantage of it because we've been doing it anyway in the iSCSI form. We've just been hiding the fact that it's remote.
All right. So here's a little interesting tidbit for you with Hyper-V and SMB and some of the stuff you talked with Aidenfin about.
Mm-hmm.
So now with Hyper-V on Server 2012, you can live migrate between Hyper-V hosts that are not part of a cluster.
Right.
That can take a while if they have their own local storage and that kind of thing. What the virtual machines on an SMB share?
It's still shared storage. It's as if it was in an iSCSI cluster.
Yep, and that both have access to it. So now these virtual machine files don't have to move anywhere.
Yep.
Now it's just a matter of syncing up the memory between two servers and switching everything over.
Mm-hmm. And so, we should, I don't know how long that is. You still have to kick into that journaling mode, make sure everything's synced, get the other thing stood up. Then, there's a blip as it hops, but I think we're talking seconds here, not even minutes.
Yep, and because you don't have to move, because with live migration to non-clustered machines, you can do that where they have their own individual storage.
Right.
But now it's got to copy that whole VHD over.
Yes.
So, you're talking, you might want to use this with really small VHDs. When you're using SMB storage, you can move workloads with bigger VHDs without as much concern.
Mm-hmm.
So now, say you're a small, medium business, and you want to get into highly available virtual machines or at least a little more dynamic infrastructure. you might not have popped for the enterprise licensing where you can do clustering. So maybe have some standard licensing around.
It makes me wonder what's going to happen to Microsoft's storage server.
I don't have any, in-depth knowledge there, but I'm guessing that it's going away because it seems like a lot of their feature sets are rolled into server.
Right. Why make a separate product when you can just roll it together into the main product?
Yeah.
Interesting point.
And, storage server, I think it was it definitely developed some of the, some of the concepts that we're seeing in Server 2012, but I don't know if it really needed to be its own SKU.
Yeah, and I don't know necessarily how successful it was either. It was generally an OEM SKU. It was kind of an odd product. But I like the idea that your file server is now your storage server. It doesn't matter whether it's just whether you're going there just to grab files the good old-fashioned way, or it's where your VMs live, or it's where your databases live. It's all the same thing.
Yeah, the only time I ever saw storage server used was in demo setups. And you wanted to use Hyper-V to demo clustering, and you were using VMs for all the clustering.
Right.
And that you started to see that fail when they released their iSCSI target as a standalone install as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think storage server probably is on its way out.
Yeah, that's fair. And I don't know that SANs are going to disappear overnight, but it definitely feels like iSCSI is seriously threatened now.
Yeah, I really don't see very much benefit for iSCSI when SMB can, perform at or above its level.
Sure. And you still get the commodity equipment effect, but you don't need dedicated hardware.
Right. And you don't need a separate management interface for being able to provision stuff. So
right.
With an SMB share, I can use my Active Directory users and groups to assign permissions to shares. With an iSCSI target, I have to be in a different management interface.
Yeah, I got to use what the vendor provided me for that.
Yep, which may or may not be scriptable, which may or may not play well with my Active Directory. There's a lot of ifs and maybes in that environment where if I'm provisioning an SMB share, it's my Windows stack. I'm tying into Active Directory. I'm using my regular Windows authentication. I'm suffering the pains of, credential delegation and stuff like that when I get Hyper-V over SMB.
Yeah, no kidding. So one other thing, Stephen, before we wrap it up today, what about instrumentation? How do I monitor all of these behaviors? Whether I'm using OpsMan or not, just from the PerfBomb perspective, have we got a separate set of metrics for all of this?
Oh, yeah. There's specific PerfBomb entries for SMB3 and for the scale-up file share.
Mm-hmm.
There's also some PowerShell commands that allow you to get a lot of this performance data and the connection statuses. So you can, take a look at your SMB share and see who's all connected, if they're using multi-channel, if they're not. Is RDMA enabled? Is RSS enabled? You can get all of that information back out through PowerShell. You can get a lot of the statistical data out of PerfBomb. So the information is all there for instruments.
Well, Stephen, thanks so much for talking to us about this.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Richard.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.